You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 4th of August, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
You know, my wife does these very advanced diet videos on Facebook, and she introduces each one precisely as you introduce the Daily Nationalist. So just consider that as the most sincere form of flattery.
Well, thank you very much. We do have to be precise in what we are talking about here. We try to be as accurate as possible. We were certainly accurate last week with our predictions about Nancy Pelosi in Taiwan. We preempted Russia Today and the mainstream news by a few days. And we're going to be talking about the fallout from that again today, because as we saw, the United States completely disregarded all the strong warnings from China about visiting Taiwan. Beijing has strongly condemned the US House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, criticizing her disregard of stern warnings from China. In a statement issued shortly after the high-ranking US official's plane landed on the island on Tuesday afternoon, the Chinese Foreign Ministry said the country will be taking measures to protect its sovereignty. This is a serious violation of the One China principle and the provisions of the three China-US joint communiques. It has a severe impact on the political foundation of China-US relations and seriously infringes upon China's sovereignty and territorial integrity, the Chinese Foreign Ministry said. The visit of the top official undermines peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and sends a seriously wrong signal to the separatist forces for Taiwan independence, the ministry added, urging Washington not to go further down this wrong and dangerous path. The ministry also warned of unspecified measures Beijing was set to take in light of Pelosi's visit, squarely blaming the potential consequences of it on Washington. And this is an unfolding news story as we are talking here. I mean, it now looks as if Taiwan has been surrounded by Chinese vessels. I mean, they may put the island under blockade. We just don't know what's going on. I mean, there's thousands and thousands of troops there. There's aircraft there. There's battle cruisers. There's live weapons that are being fired. And they did threaten a military response. But they're saying here there's also going to be unspecified measures Beijing is likely to take. What do you think these unspecified measures might be, Matt? And what are your thoughts on the current situation?
Well, maybe I'm a dreamer, but I'm really hoping the Chinese government will nationalize Pelosi's husband's holdings in China. The other methods of response short of military is, pushing American inflation by dumping some more dollars, which they've been doing on a pretty regular basis. But over the last few days, I spent some time trying to figure out the population of Taiwan and their point of view on this question. The two coalitions, blue and green, blue is generally status quo and green is generally independence in Taiwan. The blue, the Kuomintang, does better. And I finally found an opinion poll that shows the desire for independence immediately only affects about 5% of the population. Same thing for immediate unification with the rest of China. Those are tiny minority points of view. The main ones are either independence over a long period of time or unity with China over a long period of time tends to be where the population is. But those who want to keep things as they are by far the majority. From that, I can only think that this is not something particularly popular amongst Taiwanese. The possibility that everything that they've built, with the help of China, by the way, over the last 50 years can be vaporized tomorrow because Pelosi wants to be president and does something that really only the executive branch can do. It's very odd. You know, I don't ever remember this kind of response over a legislator. This is the executive branch's thing. And the very fact that someone in the Biden administration doesn't like this, the Pentagon doesn't like this, but Pelosi, in trying to be president, I mean, she has a gerrymandered district, so she can't lose an election. I'm sure they're fake anyway. But this notion to be the center of world attention, she was drinking on the island. Her speech was so stupid and incoherent. I could only think that she was drinking. There's a few people who agree with me on that. She is an alcoholic anyway. But most of all, I don't see what benefit the U.S. has here. I mean, we're sane people. Sane people don't see any benefit of doing this. Insane people, the whole neocon establishment in both parties, does want to provoke a war with China. As we said last week and 2 weeks ago, anything that allows the U.S. to create a dominant position in the world, which it no longer has. That's why these wars are being provoked with their two major rivals, Russia and China, and two sides of the world. And the U.S. maybe doesn't have to do much of the fighting. And I don't think it could. I think it's avoided fighting throughout the Cold War because the U.S. military would be so overstretched. And a couple of more defeats, and their reputation is going to go south. So this whole thing really revolves around economics, the desire for China to no longer be a major power in the world. And on a personal level, Pelosi's megalomania and really figuring if I act like a president, maybe I'll become president.
Yeah, I definitely think Pelosi's megalomania plays into this. I mean, she is so vain. You can see she's just loving every minute of that spotlight on her. And when she was talking about Taiwan being a vibrant democracy, you could just see that those words were hollow. She was basically just saying she wants Taiwan as part of the New World Order, part of liberal progressivism, opened up for American corporations, all that sort of thing. And the code word for that is a vibrant democracy. It's just hideous to watch her. Yeah, I do think she probably had too much to drink as well. She does come across as if she doesn't really know what she's the words that she's actually saying. Well, what might these measures be? You are just pointing out there, Matt, that there might be economic measures. We've seen that there are military measures. China will definitely take all necessary measures to resolutely safeguard its sovereignty and territorial integrity in response to the US Speaker's visit. All the consequences arising therefrom must be borne by the US side and the Taiwan Independence Separatist Forces, the Chinese representative said. China firmly opposes and sternly condemns this and has made serious demarches and strong protest to the United States. Following days of uncertainty over her visit, Pelosi touched down on the island late on Tuesday, in spite of repeated warnings from Beijing against the visit. The island nation, regarded by Beijing as an integral part of China, was not listed among the official destinations of the speaker's Asian tour, which included Singapore, Malaysia, South Korea, and Japan. The visit, the first time in 25 years that a House speaker has travelled to the self-governed island, has prompted a sharp increase in military activities in the region. Over the weekend, China staged live fire military drills just off the coast of the southeastern province of Fujian, just across the strait between the mainland and Taiwan. Further drills in the area are set to take place this week. The US deployed into the region the USS Ronald Reagan Carrier Strike Group, which is currently to the southwest of Taiwan in the waters east of the Bashi Channel, which separates the island and the Philippines. So the important point here is that Chinese are saying all the consequences of this have been caused by the United States. And there are critics in America that are saying this is an open provocation. I've even seen people bringing this up on the BBC that this is an open provocation. But as you pointed out there, Matt, the neocons on both the Republican side and the Democrat side are supporting this. This is a surprising thing. I think it's the only time I've ever seen the Republican Party expressing support for Nancy Pelosi. So there seems to be this big push to start this provocation. And what is going to be the end result of this? Well, it could be a blockade of Taiwan, could be an economic blockade, it could be an invasion, which the Chinese would see as a liberation. They could be liberating Taiwan. And one of the strange aspects of this is that America supports the Taiwan separatists, yet at the same time completely condemns the separatists in the Ukraine. And they say that the separatists in Ukraine, they're Russian-backed, they shouldn't be supported. And yet you've got the same thing going on here. You have these Taiwanese separatists who are American-backed. So a complete hypocrisy there, I think. Matt, what do you make of this and that America should fully take the blame for this?
Well, I don't think any rational person doubts that. I've said many times before that you know when the ruling class as a whole is behind something, when both of these, you know, similar but political parties in America agree. And it's how they go about, you know, the economic elites, media elites, how they go about approaching both parties. For the Democrats, they'll talk about, of course, they'll talk about money, but they'll also talk about so-called genocide in the East and Tibet and everything else. They'll go to Republicans, talk about money some more, although in a different footing, and then talk that this is a terrible communist country, despite a thriving small business sector. And because the party is still called communist, that's all they need. That's all the evidence they require. So they go to both sides, both factions of the ruling class for different reasons, and they bring them all together. This case with Russia, too. It was a case in the Middle East. You know, Israel's another example. That's when you know the ruling class takes this as a priority. I said 20 years ago, in the late – it was 97 or 98, the Taiwan Strait crisis. I can't remember precisely now. It was right around the time of the Hong Kong liberation from British control, when the U.S. through George Soros had crashed most of the economies of the area, with the exception of Taiwan and Peking, because they have state control over the currency. I have the feeling in Taiwan that's history. It's been history ever since the military government fell in South Korea. It still exists in China with state control over the currency. All the American measures to destroy the economy are going to fall hollow. The U.S. is so heavily dependent on elite Chinese investment. But of course, there are billions in American investment in Taiwan too. China is a much larger economy, and I'm not sure. I mean, China can function without the U.S. I don't think the U.S. can function without China. The ultimate, other than military action, as far as the regime is concerned, military action is about equal to mass nationalization in terms of what they fear. The economic repercussions are just as bad as the military ones as far as the regime is concerned. China's going to win this one way or the other. China's aware the condition that the American economy is in, how politicians and media lies about it. They're painfully aware of this. They actually have the real numbers. They're so close to the U.S. economically. But, you know, China is a debtor to the – I'm sorry, a creditor to the U.S. The U.S. is a debtor to China. China's always been in a superior position here. It has an economy that actually makes things. But as far as any military option, I've always found that hard to believe. I was researching the Taiwanese military doctrine, and because of the size differential, I mean, you have about 300,000. You have conscription there. You have about 300,000 active duty men and about 1.6 million in reserves. And over the last 30 years, 20 years, the doctrine has been what do you do with an asymmetric situation where you have a huge army against a relatively small one? And they specialize in urban warfare, mobility strikes, almost a regular form of guerrilla warfare. They're expecting, and they always have been training. I mean, so much of their air force is under concrete bunkers. At least two of the main bases are. There are no great beaches to land on. This is part of the reason in 1948-49, and it didn't. Communists didn't go into Taiwan. The U.S. and the Air Force too. Chiang Kai-shek had a bigger Air Force. So a land invasion would be immensely costly against an enemy that is very professional militarily and dedicated exclusively to fending off a Chinese attack. In other words, making an attack so costly that there's no economic sense in doing it. So I've always thought that that would be such a bloodbath. I don't think the U.S. would do anything, but that it would damage both economies to such an extent that the dependence of Taiwan on China would be destroyed. Taiwan's massive economic growth comes to a great extent because of the Chinese market. Now, no matter what the legal strictures are with trade between the two countries or the two areas, the Chinese government in Peking has massively profited from Taiwan, but Taiwan's profited even more from China. China, it's technically illegal, still the number one trading partner of Taiwan. So the economic reasons here, and no one's getting into this kind of detail. They're focused on the political, but the economic is far more important as far as the ruling class is concerned. The economic, political, and military cost of an all-out war would destroy both economies, which is part of the reason, or at least destroy the Taiwanese economy and badly damage the mainland, which is part of the reason I think the regime would love to see that provoked.
Well, that's just about the only reason that you could come up with for why this is going on. I mean, America can't possibly defend Taiwan. It's just 100 miles off China's coast. Well, you mentioned the military option there. Let's have a look at what's going on militarily. Beijing has begun conducting military drills off Taiwan after promising to launch a series of targeted military operations in response to U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to the self-governing island, Chinese media reported. The eastern zone of the PLA Combat Command is consistently conducting a series of joint military operations around the island of Taiwan, CCTV reported, hours after Pelosi arrived on the island. Pelosi touched down in Taipei late on Tuesday, despite repeated warnings from Beijing against attempting to visit territory that it regards as an integral part of China. The Chinese People's Liberation Army is on high alert and will launch a series of targeted military operations to counter this, resolutely defend national sovereignty and territorial integrity, and resolutely thwart external interference and Taiwan independence separatist attempts, Defense Ministry spokesman Wu Qian said, without providing any further detail. In a separate statement, China's Eastern Theater Command announced joint military drills off Taiwan, live firing in the Taiwan Strait, and missile test launches in the sea east of Taiwan. The exercises kicked off early on Wednesday, with footage being circulated by Chinese CCTV showing it. It was not immediately clear what exactly the targeted military operations would include, and whether they were separate from the series of drills announced by the Eastern Theater Command. So all this is going on around the island. It's all going off in the seas around this island, which are really busy waterways for cargo ships. And all the cargo ships have had to stop while this is going on. So it's already interfered with the economy. And now it looks like they've actually blockaded the island itself with all these battleships, which are firing live rounds. I mean, what do you know about the details of all of this, Matt?
Well, that military district, which contains all branches of the armed services, doesn't have an aircraft carrier. China now has two. And the other thing it lacks, too, is amphibious landing vehicles. I've looked at these military maps going back a few years on Taiwan, and the possible landing of infantry is very limited. It's a very inauspicious place to try to attack. So anything that's going to happen is going to be done either on water or in the air. And because of the Taiwanese military doctrine, there was one naval battle in 1965, which the Taiwanese won. That was a very different China back then. Otherwise, there's been no direct military confrontation that led to shooting, unlike the two Koreas. So it's both militaries are dedicated to protecting their economies. There is a Chinese Marine Corps, which is trained in amphibious landings, but they just don't have the equipment for that right now, nor would that be a very intelligent way to go about this. I think China has taken the economic route. This is, you know, the U.S. is, I think, weak militarily, despite all their shiny gadgets, has been proven before. Post-Vietnam, the U.S. was seen as a paper tiger from there on in. But the economy is where the U.S. great weaknesses. I saw something in some stupid YouTube channel, but actually it's like a Fortune, one of the big newspapers, one of the big magazines, that said China's housing market, the bubble collapses, the inflation is going through the roof, there's riots everywhere, China is falling. And I'm reading this, you know, my idea that so much of the reporting and understanding of China is actually projection. And I'm saying this is precisely what's rocked U.S. and Western Europe for the last few years. I mean, they're using the exact same terminology. What a crazy coincidence. They claim that that's exactly what's happening in China. It's not, because Chinese actually produce things. But the fact that they would actually take precisely what's going on in America and projecting it onto this enemy that they've constructed in their head, claiming the exact same thing is going on there and denying that it's happening in the U.S., I keep saying there is a psychological route that you have to take here in understanding how enemies in the U.S. ruling class, neocons, are constructed, not confronted. They're invented. They really still think China's a third world country. They honestly believe all the myths about Chinese oppression in the East, in the West. And we've said it 100 times, the nature of what this bubble is. This is what they actually believe. And, you know, Pelosi, of course, when she was there, she talked about feminism and all this crap. She was congratulating them that they have one of the highest vaccine immunization rates in the world. And these coalitions, especially the Green Coalition in Taiwan, just seems dedicated to doing the bidding of the U.S., despite the fact that their economic future lies with China. And I don't think it lays with China. And I don't think anyone denies that anymore. But again, I think 89% of the U.S. population sees China as either a rival or an enemy, which are two very different concepts. So you see how they combine those things to make it seem overwhelming. But that's usually from media propaganda and stories like the one I mentioned. And in neocon publications, publications like the Financial Times, this sort of thing happens every couple of weeks. They have a breathless clickbait article like that. So that's the other danger here, that they really believe, like before the Iraq War, that they come marching into China. China's going to collapse because the government's unpopular, and they're going to come out with flowers and American flags. Well, Rumsfeld said the exact same thing with the Iraq War many years ago. That's the bubble. That's the world is their construction, rather than something that they actually understand. And given how isolated they are from actual information, from the common population, from common intellectuals, surrounded by people who just spout the line because that's necessary for their job, and everything else is censored around them, they actually start believing this, and they don't have the critical skills to criticize this at any level, logically or in terms of the evidence. So the danger here is this enemy is invented. It's not studied and it's not understood.
Well, if it was, as you were pointing out there, they don't have amphibious vehicles. They're not able to actually land on the beaches. There's nothing stopping them just from completely blockading the island and preventing supplies getting to it, laying siege to the island, preventing these cargo ships from making their way around. I mean, that is what's happening at the moment. None of these cargo ships can get past because there are all these live fire exercises that are going on. I mean, it must be costing millions in fees just with these ships waiting there. And all of this is going to be laid at the feet of Pelosi and America. America denies breaking its word to China. U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said her visit to Taiwan in no way contradicts Washington's long-standing policy on the self-governed island after touching down in Taipei on Tuesday, despite stark warnings from China. Our congressional delegation's visit to Taiwan honors America's unwavering commitment to supporting Taiwan's vibrant democracy, Pelosi said in a statement after landing. The U.S. official said her discussions with Taiwan's leaders would focus on reaffirming our support for our partner and on promoting our shared interests, including advancing a free and open Indo-Pacific region. Taiwan was not listed on Pelosi's official itinerary for the trip, which includes stops in Singapore, Malaysia, South Korea, and Japan. But speculation had mounted in recent days that the third highest ranking figure in the US government would visit the island, prompting a harsh reaction from Beijing, which considers Taiwan part of its territory under the One China policy that was acknowledged by the United States. China regards the trip as highly provocative and threatened unbearable consequences for Washington if it went ahead. On Monday, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Zhao Lijian warned the US, "If you play with fire, you will get burned." Pelosi is the first Speaker of the House of Representatives to visit Taiwan in over two decades. Taiwan, which officially calls itself the Republic of China, has been self-ruled since the 1940s, but has never officially declared independence from Beijing. Earlier on Tuesday, Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov said Russia stands in absolute solidarity with China, arguing that Pelosi's trip was purely provocative and likely to worsen geopolitical tensions in the region. Now, why might it be that they're saying that they're not actually going against what they have said to China? If they have affirmed the One China policy and they're dealing with Beijing as being the official government of China, then surely going behind Beijing's back and arranging to go meet the independence movement of Taiwan is specifically breaking that commitment to the One China policy, isn't it? I mean, what do you know about America's commitment to this One China policy, Matt?
Well, we talked about it last week. It's a policy without a policy. It's the status quo. Taiwan exists in a legal political limbo between the West on the one hand and the Chinese mainland on the other. And it's simply saying that we'll try to keep Taiwan from being destroyed, but we're not going to say Taipei is the sole legitimate government of the entire Chinese world. Of course, Peking says that about itself. And independence actually is very ambiguous. Does it mean that, you know, we are the only representative of China? We're the only political system that's going to work for China. Still thinking in, you know, late 40s and early 50s mentality. Or does that necessarily mean, or is that, you know, if they declare actual independence, does that mean that they're saying that they are the only legitimate government in China? Or they're saying we're legitimate in our own spheres of influence, China over there, us over here. So even when you say independence, it gets very complicated. Actually, is what they mean. Now, as far as Chinese are concerned, in China, they see both of those as identical. Political independence, I don't care what ground they rested on, or saying that Taipei is the only legitimate government of all of China, or the same thing. And I guess, you know, I would say the majority of politicians in Taiwan say everything will change if the Communist Party falls in Peking. That's a very common point of view. It's less common saying that there's only one China and that happens to be here in Taiwan, going back to the, you know, if this were 50 years ago, I may agree with it. But a lot's changed since Mao's death in 76. It's a very, very different China. They're just as prosperous, if not more so, than Taipei. And when the communist era in China, with Mao and his immediate, you know, a few years after his death, it was embarrassing to see how well Taiwan was doing compared to the mainland. Well, that was a long time ago. Everything has changed. And it's funny, they talk about democracy, and yet Taiwan's explosive growth occurred under the military government. It occurred under the same Kuomintang government that fled there in 1949. Things slowed down, and things reached a crisis point only over the last, I don't know, generation, that they have secular American-backed politicians. Now, to answer your question, I just wonder, if China hadn't made a big deal about this, would it have been a big deal? There's something more in her agenda. Maybe that has nothing to do with her, and that even she's unaware of, as far as offending Chinese interests. The U.S. can use words and change the definition at will. I suppose what they mean by saying we haven't violated this ambiguous policy is saying that we are not going there saying we want an independent Taiwan. We're not going there preaching military action. We're not going there saying that only the ROC is the sole exclusive legitimate government of all of China. They're not saying any of that. Of course, economics is at the root of all of this, but that's how they can kind of weasel out of it. But, you know, you saw her plane coming in. It looks just like Air Force One. It's a fantasy trip for her. And clearly she's being used by somebody, but I think she's very easy to manipulate. She made it look as official as humanly possible, despite not being in the executive branch.
Matt, you brought up Peking there. Now, Peking separatist as well? Are they making claims to being an independent part of China or an independent state? Can you briefly comment on that?
Oh, Peking and Beijing. It's the same town, using two different methods of translation, Wade Giles, and I forget what the other one was, Pinyin, I think. I tend to, because, you know, the communists changed it over the years to sound like Beijing. I say Peking just to kind of irritate you. That's many years ago. But the Chinese position in Beijing, China as China, says over and over again that Taiwan is, you know, an illegitimate creation of the U.S. from the end of the Chinese Civil War. They have a point because Taiwan, of course, is Chinese-speaking, Mandarin-speaking, and has always been a part of the Chinese Empire. It only – once the Manchus fell, everything changed, and the Japanese occupied it. But of course it's a part of China. I don't know. I mean, Ukraine, you can make a much better case for Ukraine than you can Taiwan. Clearly, it's Chinese. And because it's so close, it's within the UN economic zone of mainland China. So they can blockade the place, no problem. They have no – you can't go to international law and complain about a country that's so close to them. Now, the U.S. has been saying this about Central America for God knows a century. So China's position is that despite the economic success, the government in Taipei has no right to exist, is not legitimate, is an installed government, a relic of the late 40s, and has always been a part of China. They see it as a separatist issue, no different than the American Civil War or anything else. And that's why they're so sensitive about it, because if they back down and back down and back down, their reputation internationally is going to go down the tubes. And that's a very good point.
Well, could Pelosi's trip be a response to China's support for Russia in Ukraine? In March of this year, Chinese President Xi Jinping chastised US President Joe Biden on Ukraine, noting that it took two hands to clap, a reference to the role played by the US in fomenting the Russia-Ukraine crisis, and declaring that he who tied the bell to the tiger must take it off, a Chinese aphorism which basically said it was up to the US to fix the problems that it was responsible for instigating. During that same conversation, President Xi likewise took his American counterpart to task for statements made by US officials, including Biden himself, which suggested that the United States was drifting away from its historical commitment to the One China policy regarding Taiwan that had underpinned U.S. Sino relations for decades. Xi noted that the direct cause of the current strain on relations is that some people on the U.S. side have not followed through on the important common understanding reached by us. And I think he's referring there to Biden saying that America would always militarily support Taiwan, which is not an agreement that America has with Taiwan. The US, Xi added, has failed to deliver on virtually all of its promises to China regarding the avoidance of conflict, simultaneously promulgating deep-seated notions of China as an imagined enemy while sending the wrong signal to Taiwan independence forces, something Xi characterized as very dangerous. Continuation of such a policy direction would, the president noted, have a disruptive impact on China-US relations. On August 2nd, the Speaker of the US House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, made her unannounced stop in Taiwan. This trip was made despite concerted warnings on the part of China that her visit would lead to egregious political impact and that the Chinese military would not sit idly by if Pelosi landed in Taipei. The visit of Pelosi, number two in the line of succession to the presidency of the United States, is a deliberately provocative move which appears to have been done independent of any coordination with the State Department, the Department of Defense, or the White House. Well, if it wasn't in coordination with them, then who was it in coordination with, Matt?
Well, this has been a major point of mine all along. The regime is not the same as the government. The government mostly does what the regime tells it. You know, the regime is the ruling class, the elites in all fields, economic, media, university, military, political. As this, you know, amorphous dominating factor, which is getting smaller and smaller as time goes on, this nature of oligarchy and monopoly. It may just be in these big investment firms, Vanguard and BlackRock today. But they are technically separate from government. You know, the government in Vietnam was fighting a war, and yet the regime was vehemently against it. Now, of course, you have both regime and government doing what they're supposed to. Government might be increasingly irrelevant when you consider Biden's condition, when you consider the total lack of American faith in it. And it's easier to control things from behind the scenes and just using the government as something that you can blame when things go wrong. Because of the Pelosi family's massive investment in that part of the world, clearly there's an economic motive. I believe that, the head of BlackRock, Larry Fink, whatever his name is far more powerful than the president is. So she's not just, you could make the argument this is pure ego and trying to sound important. The last thing the Pentagon wants is yet another war that the U.S. can't win. And they're painfully aware, though it's been kept out of the press, that the U.S. aircraft carriers are now obsolete with the Chinese and Russian anti-ship missiles and the hypersonic missiles now that the U.S. doesn't even have. It's just a show of force. And I've talked about this in so many contexts over the years. The U.S. military has been in Taiwan for a long time, back and forth. There's a certain dependency with electronics and everything else. The U.S. helped design the Taiwanese military apparatus indirectly over the years. Now, this is something Pelosi has an agenda that is not made public. And remember, when they say it's unannounced, it wasn't on the main itinerary. And this is one of the other ways that they could claim this is not a policy thing. This was just a last-minute idea here. Now, the regime wants freedom of independence, freedom of movement, which it doesn't have now. Russia and China are shutting the Americans in on all fronts. Latin America, Africa, Central Asia are all joining this Russo-Chinese coalition I've been talking about for a long time. You add to that the Belt and Road Initiative. The U.S. is seeing itself just and its own economic and political problems. The U.S. is starting to see itself as irrelevant, let alone weakening. And the only option they really have in their simple minds is maybe a war will do enough damage that we can then go in and pick up the pieces.
Well, many advisors, together with other former U.S. intelligence and national security officials, had advised President Biden to curtail Pelosi's visit out of concern that it would set in motion events which could result in a Chinese invasion of Taiwan and direct U.S.-Chinese military confrontation. But the White House refused to interfere with what it deemed to be the operation of a separate branch of government. There can be little doubt that China did everything in its power, short of shooting Pelosi's plane down, to dissuade the Speaker of the House to forego her Taiwan visit. From the standpoint of national credibility, China literally put it all on the line. For China to do nothing in the face of what is an obvious provocation on the part of the US through Pelosi is not a probable outcome. And the question now is, what will China do? The current diplomacy card has, for all intents and purposes, been exhausted. While China has imposed certain economic sanctions on Taiwan, the reality is the sanctions card, as wielded by China, is insufficient to the task of responding to the Pelosi provocation. China has already engaged in an unprecedented mobilization of military resources, by some accounts assembling more than 40 brigades, along with significant air defense and ballistic missile forces, hundreds of aircraft and scores of ships. By rough calculation, this amounts to some 250,000 troops, and it doesn't appear as if the mobilization is yet complete. China has announced that it will be holding live fire exercises around the periphery of Taiwan, including some that encroach on what Taiwan considers to be its sovereign space, running from August 4th, the day after Pelosi's departure from Taiwan, through until August the 7th. There is considerable cost, both in terms of fiscal resources and political capital, attached to military exercises of this scale during times of crisis. By mobilizing this amount of military resources, China has created a use-it-or-lose-it situation where the military viability of the assembled force dissipates over time. The key question that needs to be answered is, will China be satisfied with simply sending a signal to Taiwan and then return its forces to their respective barracks once the exercises conclude? Or if the Chinese government has determined that a red line has been crossed, and as such, orders its military to transition from a live fire exercise to an actual invasion. And as we were speaking here, apparently the Meridian Line was crossed by the Chinese Air Force deliberately flying into Taiwanese airspace. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, let me end just by saying Taiwan is not a part of the United Nations, for better or for worse. It's been the case for a long time. They don't have sovereign space. As far as the UN is concerned, Taiwan is within the economic realm of China. So the Meridian is something that's kind of vague. It's closer to China than Taiwan. But international law is not relevant here. They've reported many. They've put over 77 Chinese jets flying over. And then I think they're trying to see what the Americans are going to do. You know, you can have limited wars like you had in post-war Korea, limited wars like in Middle East in the 60s and 70s without, you know, leading to a military nuclear conflict. That's, you know, like in 1965. That maybe is what may happen here, something on the water or on the air. But, you know, Taiwan can resist an invasion for a month. I think that's their official estimate, but at tremendous cost to China. So I think they're gauging the American response with so far is you know, to have a standoff, hands-off policy.
Basically, to teach America a lesson then. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.